My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
All right, everyone. We are in for a very special treat on this week's episode. I'm Fred, joined by Dave Meltzer once again to talk about the Greatest Wrestler Ever project that just finished up a couple weeks ago. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. How are you?
I mean, it's all right.
It's freaking crazy. I mean, between the this was quite the week of news.
It was, yeah. And of course, I'm having you on to discuss none of it, but
yeah, really.
I mean, what's funny?
A lot of really important news, actually.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. And we have the UFC show tomorrow being allowed to go on legally.
I don't think that was ever in danger, really.
I think they were just going to ignore that, probably. You know, which yeah, that's the era we live in. GWE finished up, run by the people over at Pro Wrestling Only, which I think is a follow-up from Death Valley Driver, but a different group, the name of which I'm forgetting right now, did the first one back in 2006. It's an every-decade project where people get together and vote on their 100 greatest wrestlers, and it's all amalgamated into an overall list, of course. Mm-hmm. This is the third edition. I wish I had the 2006 and 2016 lists up. I can tell you real quick, the 2016's number one was Ric Flair. I don't remember who 2006's was, but this year it was Terry Funk. There's definitely some interesting movement, and I think a big part of that was that there was a lot more voters. Like, there was a tremendous increase in voters from outside of the previous ecosystem of voters, and I think it really led to some very interesting results. Now, Dave, you said you haven't had a chance to look at this list thoroughly.
Yeah, I did know that Terry Funk was number one, but I don't really know. I'm not really familiar with the list. I haven't seen the list.
All right, cool.
You know, I mean, it's interesting, you know, because, again, everything, you know, frameworks are very different. To me, it's very difficult to, I mean, it's very difficult to compare eras for me.
Yeah.
It's really almost impossible. Like, if you were to say, like, do the list, and I would say I couldn't do the list. I mean, I really couldn't, because it's like, you know, how do I compare Terry Funk to Kenny Omega? You know what I mean? It's like they were both great wrestlers during the period that they were great wrestlers. It was completely different business in each case. Although Terry Funk did transcend several eras. And changed, you know. I mean, the Terry Funk of the 60s and the Terry Funk in the ECW, you know, were so completely different, it's not even funny. But it's like, I can't compare eras. I also have a hard time going backwards. And like, I think I can pretty fairly do anything from 70 on, 71 on, because when I started watching wrestling, and I watched a lot of wrestling in the 70s, mm-hmm. but like in the 60s, you know, I'm going by legend and things like that. So it's difficult. And then there's also the situation of, you know, I mean, I think until you get to, man, I don't even know when, 90, you know, the majority of the stuff that these guys did wasn't taped. And, you know, it depends on the place you were. Like, if you worked in the 80s, if you worked for Crockett, they had a really high, you know, the motivation, because of Ric Flair and people like that, the motivation level of the wrestlers was so much higher to produce really good matches. If you went to WWE, I mean, the motivation was not to do that. It was the exact opposite. So it's kind of like, But if you watch on, if you watch like only pay-per-views, you won't know the difference. You know what I mean? I mean, or you won't see the difference nearly as much. But I mean, I went to house shows, you know, and I mean, I've seen a lot of these guys in house shows. I mean, they were terrible. They didn't do anything, you know, and I've seen other guys who, like, no matter what, when you saw them, they were always good. They were, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And they're kind of like graded the same because if you, you know, if you're going to watch like three of their matches or even more, you know, you're going to, you know, and then there's different territories and there's different rings and then there's different styles of what the fans wanted. I mean, there's so many variables to this. It's like, that's why I said, I used to be able, like when people said, who's the greatest wrestler of all time, I was pretty strong on Ric Flair at one point, but now, I mean, I mean, there's too many different things to say greatest wrestler. I mean, how do I compare? I could never compare Ric Flair with Will Ospreay because they're doing different things. You know, it's, you know,
yeah.
One was doing 300 matches a year. One was doing 30, you know, one in those 30 was taking things to a level completely above. That's because he had 2 weeks off between matches. And he was given, you know, he was booked in a manner where he's booked with more people to have great matches because you're put in that position like all those guys that work New Japan and All Japan in the really strong eras. I mean, the depth is so much that, of course, you're going to have all these incredible matches more than anyone else working in another place where you didn't have that level of talent. So anyway, it's just, I mean, it's just a really, really, really hard project that I really couldn't really do.
Yeah, I put together a top 100. I think it was like fine. I don't think I was one of the most informed voters by any stretch, but I think I did okay. I've got a lot to learn. I've got several blind spots that I'd like to work on before the next one. But yeah, I just always think it's really interesting to get people together to compare their viewpoints on wrestling and share, you know, what they have seen, what they think about it. So that's what I think is the benefit of this. And, you know, to let you know about wrestlers that you haven't seen before so that you can check out their stuff. So... So I do want to specifically point out that Stephen Graham, aka Grimace, did a great job of organizing this, and I wanted to thank him and his team for their work on this. So I guess going back a little bit, you know, we already talked about like comparing against across areas, I should say, and how difficult that is. Do you think you would value peak versus longevity? Like if someone was a short career but had a much higher peak, do you think you'd go with someone like that over someone that stuck around longer but maybe didn't quite have the highest output levels, I guess?
I think longevity is important, but when you get to a point where, you know, somebody's been in for 40 years, maybe those last 20 years aren't necessarily beneficial in that sense, you know, but I think I think longevity is important. More than, you know, I mean, like a guy like Buzz Sawyer, right, who was really, really, really great, you know, really one of the best guys for a short period of time there. I wouldn't put him in my top 100 by any stretch of the imagination, because, you know, I mean some guys did burn their body out, you know, and things like that. Then again, like with Satoru Sayama, because of his importance to the business, maybe, in his case, the peak is more important than the longevity or Dynamite, you know, where everybody mm-hmm. kind of, you know, but that's more an influence thing more than anything else, I think, you know, like Dynamite, okay. I don't know, Dynamite, you know, I mean, people do remember Dynamite as one of the greatest that there ever was. And, you know, it's really comparatively a short period compared to many others, you know, that he would be ranked against. I mean, like him, yeah, peak performance, he'd be way, 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 way up there, but he didn't have the longevity due to the injuries. You know, so there is that. Yeah.
You know, and another thing I thought was interesting was to be nominated, you had to be nominated to receive votes. So there were people that were not nominated, I should say, but they did receive votes. And so those did not count for points for them. You did have to be nominated, and the nomination had to link to three matches that you had. So can you think of anyone offhand that like would not qualify for this list that you would be interested in considering, but there just isn't enough footage out there to even meet that rather low barrier?
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, nothing, you know, there's got to be three matches for, for anyone from the 70s on somewhere, you know, I would think. I mean, I know, like, man, a lot of the territorial stuff that was taped, I mean, the TV doesn't even air now. But, you know, a lot of guys were you know, like when I was younger, I mean, it was not your TV match that mattered. It was your arena matches, and those weren't
taped. Right.
So, you know, if you're watching TV of some guys, it's not even their main stuff. But a lot of them were very good at, you know, you could watch them on TV and you can kind of get a good read on a lot of them. But, you know, I mean, there's 20-minute wrestlers and there's 25-minute wrestlers and there's 4-minute wrestlers, you know, and that's all different too.
Okay. I will open by asking you just off the cuff, and I know this is hard. Who do you think would be at least a contender for your top 10? If you were to make such a
list? Oh man, I don't know because I haven't like really written it down. I mean, I could, if you, I mean, you know, I mean,
just off the top of the head,
you know, Ospreay, Ken of Kobashi, Ibushi, Bret Hart, Ric Flair for sure, Terry Funk for sure, Steamboat. I mean, like, I'm, once I start naming names, it's gonna be way over 10, but like Steamboat was always great. Let me see, Kota Ibushi, really, you know, was absolutely incredible. Let me think, what else? You know, it's like I sort of can, you know, people always say Ray Stevens. I actually saw a lot of Ray Stevens, pretty high. Harley Race was really good, of course. You know, there's so many guys in Mexico. I'm trying to think of like the real, you know, Santo was really, really good, of course. El Hijo del Santo, not El Santo. You know, I mean, there's so many of those type of guys. It's hard for me, but I know I wouldn't necessarily put like so many of the Mexican guys top 10 I've ever seen. Even Santo, I wouldn't put top 10 for sure, but they're really good in different ways. You know, man, it's hard. Jumbo Tsuruta at peak, big match, Jumbo Tsuruta and Tatsumi Fujinami were tremendous. You know, and then you go into like Kyoshi Tamura, you know, completely different style and everything, but I watch that stuff back now. I just watched a Tamura match yesterday. I was like, Jesus Christ. Chris Benoit is a worker. My God, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, you know, I mean, those guys were awesome. I mean, I haven't watched a Chris Benoit match in almost 20 years. I've watched one Chris Benoit match in the last 19 years. And it was, I was watching a New Japan pay-per-view and they threw a Liger Benoit match when they used to have intermissions on those pay-per-views. And so it's like, well, I'm not going to walk out of the room. I'm going to watch it. And I was like, God damn, like he's better than I remember, if not, you know, and I remember him being pretty good. It's like, you know, he's like one of those guys where, you know, if he came in now, my God, you know, he'd have been, you know, even with his, you know, not superlative mic skills, his in-ring, because, you know, in-ring is so much more important now than it used to be. Man, that guy would have been in this era, like he'd have been, you know, man, he'd have been high on the cards like a lot and working with so much more better people. You know, I could say that with a lot of the guys then, you know, I think there are guys who today, if they were around, you know, today with the skill set that they had before, man, they would be incredible. But they were in the wrong era for their skills because, you know, they came during this. Maybe they came during the era where you had to be really big. Maybe they didn't have a great body during this era where everybody had to be on steroids, you know. So it's like, it's kind of weird, you know, like, you know, there's so much to it. Like in the 80s, you know, late 80s, right? You know, Ray Stevens, you know, I mean, with his height and his build and everything, it's like he wouldn't, nobody even given him a second chance. I mean, to get through the door, you know, and he was one of the greatest of his era. And conversely, there's a lot of guys that did very, very well in the 80s that today, you know, they wouldn't do well at all, you know, because it's so much more based on performance than just talking ability or muscles, you know. So it's like, you know, that's why I say it's like there are guys when I will look back, I'll go like, I watched a Brian Pillman match yesterday, and he would have been much better today than he was then, even though he was pretty good then. But my God, those guys were so steroided up in that era. It's like, I didn't even like Brian today. It was just like, my God, you'd go like, look at all the stuff that he's on. And back then he was like a small guy, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's so different.
So the actual, what we ended up with, in the voting as a top 10 was, starting with number one was Terry Funk, of course. Brian Danielson moved up to number two. Kenta Kobashi was third. Ric Flair fell to fourth. Steve Austin was fifth. Genichiro Tenryu was sixth. Stan Hansen was seventh. Rey Mysterio Jr. was eighth. Bret Hart was ninth. And Mitsuhara Misawa was 10th.
I mean, they're all great. They're all great. I wouldn't say anything bad. I mean, I certainly wouldn't have I'd have some of those people. I don't know if I'd have Stan Hansen top 10 of all time, but you know, he was great. Tenryu, you know, maybe. I mean, he was, you know, I mean, like if you look at the early years of his career, he wasn't that good, but from 84 on, you know, he was really good. And, you know, had a style that would work today, that worked in his era. You know, he wasn't necessarily so as flashy. Like I saw a lot of Tenryu live, like a lot. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I wouldn't say top 10 I've ever seen, but he was pretty damn good, you know. I mean, you know, so
top 50 ish, do you think?
What?
Top 50 ish, do you think?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He's
okay. Okay.
Yeah. You know, he was great. He was great. You know, through Tenryu was some of the best matches of their era. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I remember, you know, Jumbo Tsuruta would be really, really high. You know, I mean, I know, I mean, there's so many guys, you know, like the Pat O'Connor type guys that were just, they were just awesome. That, you know, maybe there's not enough footage of them in their prime. And I didn't even see Pat O'Connor till after his prime, but I mean, I know from the little I've seen and from talking to guys, you know, like that, you know, the Pat O'Connor, Buddy Rogers, Ray Stevens were always the guys that wrestlers that I talked to, just they were like the tops of their era. And I've seen it. I saw enough of Pat O'Connor past his prime to know he must have been absolutely awesome. Rogers, you know, it's so different and so primitive compared to today, but obviously his drawing power speaks for itself. And you know, you can tell by watching him that he was a great worker. And Stevens I saw, you know, and he was great. But I went, like, again, like I saw a lot of Ray Stevens live, and I would not, I know that, like, I would later saw a lot of Ric Flair live, and I would say that, like, Ric Flair was, you know, was better to me than Ray Stevens was. But, you know, it was also one of those things where, if you, you know, to some people, you know, you could never say anyone was better than Ray Stevens, because, you know, and I think there's probably some people who do that now with people from the past too. You know, nobody could ever be better than them because you won't allow them to be better, you know, even if they are. But you know, Pat Patterson was awesome. You know, I mean, he's like so underrated. Like he was way ahead of his time. And again, like I saw him, you know, I probably saw more live Pat Patterson matches than almost anyone. And I mean, he was always great. You know, I mean, he's I'm sure in this list, like he would, you know, based on the fact that people haven't seen him, you know, except for when he was in his 40s, for the most part, that he would be terribly underrated. But he's like, as a live house show guy, he's one of the best I ever saw.
Patterson finished 341st.
Yeah. So, and, I mean, like, you know.
Stevens
I mean,
was 431st, so.
Oh, geez. Well, but again, people didn't see him. I can't.
Yeah, it's a footage issue, I think.
I can't blame them, but they would be. I mean, they're both top 50 easily. I mean, prime Stevens, because nobody could sell like him, and nobody could punch like him and do things like that. And Patterson just is an all-around worker, you know, I mean, night after night after night. Like, again, like I, he was much, much, he was much, much better night after night than guys that, than a lot of guys that are probably in the top 10, even some of the guys in the top 10. Yeah.
There's a lot of discussion of like what changed with the voting group and, you know, trying to look at the results to kind of determine that. The big jumps in the top 10, Steve Austin went up 19 spots. He was at 24, got up to 5. And Bret Hart went up 8 spots from 17 to 9. And Tenryu went up 7. So from the mid-teens to 6.
Yeah, that's still the same. That's still all the same ballpark to me.
Yeah, it's nothing really huge in this group.
I wouldn't have Steve Austin that high, and I saw him a ton, and he's great. Don't get me wrong, great. I mean, if you're including drawing power, that's a different story. Then
I do believe this is supposed to be in ring.
Okay, but even then, number one, I couldn't go that high with him. I'm pretty sure he couldn't go that high with him. You know what I mean? I mean, he was really, really good, but he was, you know. I mean, he didn't stand out to me like top 10 of all time. And I like the guy, you know. And I mean, if you're including the whole package for a 3-year period, you know, and value to a company, of course, you know, without a doubt. But just in ring, I mean, not top 10, but he was, you know, I mean, he was really, really good. Of course, they all, you know, I'm sure everyone in the top 50. In some form is really, really good.
Yeah. The top 20, I should say. We have our first woman at number 11 with Aja Kong, who made a huge jump to go up. Eddie Guerrero at 12, Hiroshi Tanahashi 13, Toshiaki Kawada 14, Vader, who finished 15th without a single first place vote, Akira Hokuto at 16, AJ Styles 17, Mick Foley 18, Jumbo Tsuruta 19, and Samoa Joe 20th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't have Mick Foley that high. he's someone who I really like. Not Joe either. You know, not top 20. I mean, but they're all really good. I mean, best woman wrestler I ever saw live, whatever, is Toyota, and the second is Hokuto. But Aja Kong was awesome too. You know, I mean, she was, for her time, Jaguar Yokota was. You know, I mean, for her time and everything, she was the best. And I think the most important thing with her is that she jumped the style so much. You know, if you look at the women in the 70s before her, I mean, you know, nobody was in anywhere close. She comes along and she's better than the men, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody was until she came along. When she came along, I remember first watching her and it was just like, I mean, it was like, you know, in the early 80s when I watched her, it was like, okay, I got to stop watching her because this makes no sense. You know what I mean?
Right.
She's like just too good. I couldn't fathom watching someone that good. You know, a couple of years later, it was kind of like I really started studying her, and that's when she was on her way out. But, you know, she was, you know, I mean, but I mean, would I say that she was better than Akira Hokuto at her best? Maybe no. Chigusa Nagayo, you know, but, you know, with a lot of limits, it's short term, whereas Manami Toyota, you know, just based on the fact that the women wrestlers were allowed to work longer, you know, and Hokuto had her injuries. So, I mean, I think if you throw in longevity, it's really hard for me to pick anyone but Manami Toyota is the top woman wrestler I've ever seen.
Okay. So just to round out the top 25, because I don't think I finished that, Randy Savage 21, El Hijo Del Santo 22, CM Punk 23, Ricky Steamboat 24, and Jushin Liger 25.
Yeah, I wouldn't have Punk that high for sure. I mean, you know, and everything. I mean, just I don't even know how you know, I mean, He's very, very smart at how he wrestles. But I mean, you know, I mean, the athletic side, you know, it's like there's so many guys that were very, very smart. And again, we're only talking in ring, you know, I mean, like promo wise, I mean, he's an awesome promo, you know, one of the best promos in the ring. I mean, very good.
I would say that
that feels way high to me, though. I mean, when I think of, you know, when I've seen him and everything compared to, you know, so many of the guys that you're talking about on the list, they're so much better.
I had him 40th on my list. I think the what I'd say about him is he maximized what he could do in the ring
I would agree with that. But I mean, as there was guys like, I mean, I've seen, you know, there's a lot like it's hard for me to pick like anyone top 10 Mexico, but there's like a whole slew of people that when I think about having seen them, that would be, to me, would be like way higher than someone like Punk. Or Japanese guys, you know, and Americans too. I could just name so many of the people that I saw, even in the 70s, where I think there were like there were a lot of wrestlers then, but like when I think of the standouts that, you know, and everything like that, they were, a lot of them were you know, going to be above, you know, even like your, you know, 70s Don Morocco or Billy Robinson type of guys, you know, that you know, they just because of their superior athletic ability, you know, they're going to be way above that, I think. And they maximized their stuff. I mean, Don didn't care as much as some people, but you know, he was incredible.
So what I'd like to do is go ahead and get started with making a list from your takes. And we'll see how far we can get with the time we have. But what I want to do is just introduce a person to you, have you talk about them briefly, and then we'll eventually get to the point where we have you compare them and just pick one. Just, it's not a life or death decision. Just have you do an off the cuff decision, and we'll see how far we get. If that sounds good to you.
Sure.
All right, cool. So I'm going to start. I have a list of four that I'm going to start with here. They finished, I think, a little lower in the list than, well, not really close to the top 25, but Jack Briscoe.
He was great. You know, it's, again, that's an era situation. For his era, like, he was, to me, like he was like the very near the top of his era. You know, he was, it's like, I mean, the closest equivalent I can think of Jack Briscoe was Steamboat. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that I would, you know, and maybe it's just because Steamboat came later, I think that he was a little bit more dynamic, but Briscoe had more of an aura about him. Like when you watched Briscoe, I mean, he gave off the vibes of, okay, nobody could beat him. He's too good of a wrestler. You know what I mean? And that was important in his era. That wouldn't be as important today. But he was, you know, like I said, like for his era, I gotta think he was top 10 of his era. I watched him and I mean, he was one of those guys that you were kind of in awe of, you know, like rather than just a wrestler, you know, it was just, you know, just so technically great and well-conditioned, and he was always in the right place. And, you know, just the whole ability to have him, his matches with Dory Jr., you know, for that era, for that style, they were so different from everybody else. And that's why they were the legendary matches of their time, and they drew over and over and over for years and years and years and years and years. And people that from that era will go and say they were the best matches that they ever saw, you know, from that era. But yeah, I'd have him pretty high. Not top 10 though, but I have him pretty high.
Okay. Funny you brought him up. I actually had Dory Funk Jr. as my next person to bring up to you.
So Dory Funk Jr. is like there's two Dory Funk Jr. eras. Okay. So the Dory Funk Jr. when he was world champion, to me, was a really great world champion because of his versatility, for his ability to carry people, to make himself not look bad while making the other person look like they could beat the champion. I think he was a, you know, kind of like a Flair. He did not have the color at all of Flair. He did not have the promo ability at all of Flair, yet he was a perfect world champion for his time. I don't know, like, if I were to look back and watch him today, my gut is I wouldn't. I mean, maybe I would appreciate it because I lived in that era. But I also have known people going like, I don't get it. And it's like, well, because you weren't around. How would you get it? You know?
Yeah.
But I was around. And then there's the era later in Japan. And the key to that was that because he went to Japan and had those matches, the real famous match with Inoki. And he was the first NWA champion to defend the title there since Fez, you know, although Kanisuke went when he was champion. But he didn't, you know, when Kanisuke went, he was challenging Baba for Baba's title. He didn't go as in to defend the NWA title. Dory went and defended the NWA title. And the NWA title was the big thing. So that because of being there in that era and being that guy and then always being booked as this great, great wrestler, you know, when they, you know, in the late 70s, the Funk Brothers and everything like that, I mean, Dory was tremendous in that period, but Terry kind of stood out because it was more charismatic and different. Like Dory was a way better world champion than Terry was. You know, I mean, for the era, and I think almost anyone would agree with that. Terry was, you know, Dory was very, very serious. He made the matches look, you know, more like a sporting contest. Terry was more of a performer, you know, wilder. The matches didn't have the credibility, but as an entertainer, he was really good. But a lot of the people thought that, like, that shouldn't be the world championship match in the 70s. It wasn't what Race did. It wasn't what Junior did. And it wasn't what Briscoe did. Terry was different. And some people would find that good. But I mean, as a, you know, as a worker in certain ways, you know, Terry was in some ways the best wrestler that ever. I mean, I think that when it comes to versatility and reading the crowd, coming in, him and Stevens were guys that, like, from the moment they leave the dressing room until the moment they go back to the dressing room, they just turned the on switch on. You know what I mean? It was different from other people. And Terry also could go in to a building that people didn't know him and get super heat in 30 seconds. And not a lot of guys could do that if you didn't know him. And I've seen it, you know, in cities where, you know, he wasn't famous and he walked in and, you know, Sheik was like that. Sheik could do that too. But even though Sheik, most places people knew the name, but Sheik was only good for 3 minutes. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas Terry could do that and then go, you know, 20 minutes or longer if need be, you know? So, but Dory, for his time, Dory was, you know, arguably the best in the world, but I don't know that it would look that way today. It probably wouldn't.
Yeah, some people really benefit from footage from the passage of time, and some people less so, I think.
Styles change.
Sure.
When you're, well, you know, I mean, there's, you know, and styles changed a lot in the mid-70s. You know, I mean, in the early 70s, the top guys, the top baby faces were those, you know, just white meat baby face. By the late 70s, you know, once Dusty came in and Bruno and the Bruiser and all these guys, you know, you wanted, the people wanted the brawlers and the brawlers. You know, they didn't really want the scientific wrestlers, as they were called in that era. But in the early 70s, that's what they wanted, and that's what drew. And so those guys were the top guys. Plus, I would say after 75, a lot of the promoters cared a lot less about the idea of wrestling coming across as a sport. And they were more about, well, we don't care if it doesn't look real, or you know, or it doesn't look like it's wrestling, or it doesn't, like, sort of fit into what real wrestling would look like. We're just out for entertainment, because they're starting to accept that it's entertainment. And in the 80s, obviously went even further, and now it's just 100% entertainment, and really has been since the 80s. But in the early 70s, there was a lot of, you know, it had to, I mean, it was entertainment, but it had to look more, it couldn't be far-fetched, I'll put it that way. And then
more grounded in reality.
Yeah, more grounded in reality a little bit. Yeah, yeah. You know, like kind of like, I guess closer to Japan, you know, because Japan, I think Japan kept that, you know, wanting it to look sort of like real, you know, like plausible, I guess. They kept that longer, you know, in the United States, it was long gone. In Japan, you know, I guess maybe because of Inoki and Baba, it's like they still clung to that because they were stars from the 60s. So they still reverted back to 60s and 70s. Whereas like, you know, the people who came later, they didn't revert back that many decades.
Next name on my list was Linus Asuka.
She was awesome. Yeah, she was awesome.
I've never seen her before. So like, how did she work?
She did some martial arts stuff. She did some pro wrestling stuff. She had in, you know, just always incredible crowd heat when she was younger with the Crush Gals. Chigusa Nagaya was the star of the Crush Gals. But Asuka was more, I mean, like, she would have been the one that, based on the Jaguar Yokota thing, would have been a, you know, the better world champion, even though that, you know, whereas Chigusa was more of the idol, type, but, I mean, as a team or singles or whatever, they were great. They were great. Hard soup. They all worked so hard and they worked that hard schedule. But again, it was like the mentality was, is like, you know, you're going to have your 3 years, your 4 years, five, you know, not even 5 years. So you're going to have your 3 or 4 years and they worked you to death, you know, and your bodies took a toll and everything like that. They worked a much higher pace, every night, you know, you know, got great crowd heat.
And the last of the first four names I wanted to bring up was Bruiser Brody, who I think is probably the most familiar with most people at this point still.
Yeah. I mean, Bruiser Brody was also a great product of his era. I think he was very, very smart. So I think that, I mean, it's weird because like a guy like Bruiser Brody today, you know, back then, if you were a draw, you know, you could, you know, like with Hogan and everything, you know, and Andre and people like that, Stan Hansen, if you were a draw, and Brody was more of a draw than Stan Hansen, you know, especially in the United States. But if you were a guy who can increase box office, you had a lot of leverage. Dusty Rhodes had a lot of leverage. People like that. You had a lot of leverage. So he took advantage of the leverage and everything like that. Today, when it's so much company-oriented, it'd be tougher. And he would have to have adapted. I mean, work-wise, he was great for his era, whether it be, you know, how it looked today. I know like with Terry Funk, I mean, like the guys, like he would have Brody, like, you know, I don't know, top five, six. I mean, with Terry, cause we have talked about that a lot, you know, the guys that he would be the highest on, you know, Ray Stevens, Johnny Valentine, Jack Briscoe, Brody. I'm trying to think who else, but those, yeah, those guys, there's others, you know, David Finley, he was very, very high in David Finley. You know, but those were kind of like the guys for him, that Ricky Steamboat, he was very high on. Ric Flair, to a degree. I mean, Ric Flair, he didn't always get along with Ric Flair and everything, but he pretty much agreed Ric Flair was certainly super. But I remember one time, like, there was something in, I think, I don't know if he just discovered the internet or something or whatever. And he saw like negativity on Brody. And I remember him saying to me, he goes like, well, that's the test. He goes, what do you mean? And it's like, if you don't get Brody, then you don't get wrestling. And if you do get Brody, you know, like that, you know, and it's like, because, you know, I mean, cause I even used to complain he doesn't sell enough. And he just goes, who do you think wants him not to sell as much? You know, I mean, that's the whole idea of Brody. Like he thought the world of Brody is as a performer and as an opponent, like, you know, one of his best ever. He was also very high in Lawler, which a lot of people of his era were not, but he was, you know, I mean, because he didn't have the negative stigma of Memphis that so many of the wrestlers that didn't, you know, that if you read the books or anything from wrestlers from the 70s and 80s, you know, Memphis was had a very negative connotation, and Funk did not have. Funk, I think, was very open-minded in the sense of if it draws, you know what I mean? That's why he reverted to the Onita stuff later. You know, he was versatile and he would change. Whereas a lot of guys, you know, what you started with or what was the thing in your era, when it changes, it's like, it's bad, it's wrong, it's no good. You know, like I remember Kowalski was on some TV show and so this would have been the mid 80s when he was starting to get some publicity for his Monster Factory. And he goes like, well, the first thing I do when I teach wrestlers is I tell them, quit watching that crap on TV. It's all terrible. None of them know what they're doing. And it's like his mentality was the stuff that was big in the 50s and 60s. Unfortunately, he was training wrestlers for later. And it's, you know, not applicable, but in their, you know, in people's minds, and this happens with every generation, it's like the more it doesn't look like what you did, the worse it is. But, you know, it's like it's different fan base that you're wrestling in front of is that's seen more different things, and you can't go backwards. I remember Mushnick, you know, in the went to WWF show, I'd say 86 or so. It wasn't that far. And maybe actually, I think it was 87. It was 87. And I remember him telling Matisic afterwards, and Matisic didn't want to hear it, but it was just like, you know, what we did was great for all that time. And he goes, but this is what the wrestling is now. And we couldn't do today what we did then. And Larry was like, oh, we could just do it. We could re-educate the audience. He goes, no, they've seen it go too far that we can't go backwards. We couldn't do what we did. It was, you know, it worked in its day. And I think that's a thing that, like, a lot of people, you know, that want it to go backwards. It's kind of like this audience that's grown up at this level, you can't go back to this level because it's boring. It's boring to them.
So with those four, Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr., Linus Asuka, sorry, and Bruiser Brody, what order would you put them in if you had to put them in an order?
I couldn't.
Dave, this is the whole deal.
Okay. I couldn't. I mean, I couldn't rate Jaguar Yokota. I mean, no, Linus Oxica. I couldn't rate her above or below any of them. She's just too completely different. And Brody and Jack Briscoe, you couldn't be more different. You know, and Dory, you know, I mean, Brody was better for the 80s than them. And they were better for the 70s than him. That's what I would say. And Asuka was better for All Japan Women, but you know, I can't compare her to any of them.
Okay, all right. So we'll get through some more Daves then, and just get your opinions on them as workers. Yoshiaki Fujiwara,
he's good. He was good. You know, I
know some people that really love him and his work.
Yeah. I mean, there's a style that he's really good at. I mean, I saw him live a lot. Not a lot, but I mean, I saw him in the 80s live and, you know, on a tour. He didn't stand out as one of the best guys, but he had a really cool gimmick, you know, the shooter gimmick and everything. And he played that really well. You know what I mean? Like he was one of those first guys who knew how to not sell in a real positive way to get himself over, but not hurt the other guy. Mm-hmm. And his dynamic way of going into submissions is really excellent. I wonder if he would be better later than then. I mean, the thing is like, you know, he didn't have the dynamic presence whatsoever of a top guy. Like say in Antonio Inoki, who had this incredible presence. But what Inoki wanted to be, shooter, you know, and everything, it was like Fujiwara kind of wrestled that way. But like, it's like, I don't remember Fujiwara in what I would call like super memorable, high matches. I mean, I remember like some of his stuff, you know, and I certainly remember the Ricky Choshu feud really well. You know, because that was very, very, very unique for its time. And it was really exciting. You know, I saw his stuff later in the 90s. And, you know, he was good. He was good. He was good. I mean, if that's what you like, you know, he's one of the best there is, if that's what you like. But I mean, as far as like live and then and just kind of like the feel when you're watching him live and the crowd reaction, everything like that. Not at the top level. No.
Okay. What about Nobuhiko Takada?
Yeah, he was the opposite in the sense, not the opposite, but if you know, watching him like when he was young, watching him when he was like he had superstar presence. He just had that presence. And he was really good at the style that he was working, like absolutely fantastic. You know, for early 90s shoot style, you know, good looking guy, good body, the great kicks, could do all the wrestling moves, you know, could sell pretty decently, credibility wise. He was for his time and style, like I would say Tamura passed him. For sure. Mm-hmm. Tamura to me was the best of all of them when it came to actually performing as a pro wrestler in that realm. But Takada before Tamura, I think he was the best at that specific thing. And he could transfer it back. Like when Takada went to New Japan after the run and he had those matches with Hase and Koshinaka. I mean, those matches were fantastic for their time. So yeah, I think Takada was like really, really high. I mean, all time, if you talk about his peak. Yeah, he's way up there.
Interestingly, Fujiwara was top 50 in the results. Volkan was 49th. Fujiwara was 46th. Takada finished 155th.
Yeah. I mean, I know when I mean I saw Takada with, you know, I mean, Takada would be pretty damn high for me. You know, especially seeing him live. When you watch those kicks live, he was incredible because. He kicked hard to the chest where you can kick hard, and he'd do these kicks to the head. They were unbelievable in the sense of, I mean, I'd be right there in the front row watching him kick to the head. And I mean, every kick looked like he was knocking people out, and he was not touching them. So, I mean, in that skill, he, you know, he's like Dynamite Kid in the sense of he's doing stuff that just looks like he's just destroying the other guy and he's not even touching him. So, yeah. I mean, Takada should be, I mean, way, way higher than that. Way, way higher.
Okay. All right. So I'll just go through picks of people. I will just talk about them. Too Cold Scorpio at 199.
A very good acrobatic wrestler. Way ahead of his time. Probably would be a bigger star now than he was then. People didn't really, I think these people in the establishment of wrestling just didn't really get what he was and get it, you know what I mean? I think he could have been a much bigger star when he was around too. But again, the acrobatics weren't nearly as important and it was more promo and look and that held him back. But I think he should have done better. But yeah, acrobatic wise, like he was super gifted, super gifted, mm-hmm. You know, and way ahead of his time.
Let's see here. Dump Matsumoto at 51.
I mean, she might have been the best heel I'd ever seen as far as live. You know, I mean, she was just, actually, I actually shouldn't say that because I don't remember. I don't think I saw her live, but I saw her so many times on tape because I think the first time I didn't go to any women's shows in 84 when she was on top. So I would say, but I think Dump Matsumoto is one of the best heels there's ever been, and perfect for her time. I mean, she wasn't as a wrestler, really not that special, but as far as, you know, as a heel and a scary presence and everything, like Bull Nakano and Aja Kong were much, much better wrestlers than her. But as far as personality and heel, she was ahead of both of them. She was, she was awesome.
Do you think she'd be a contender for your top 100?
Not bell to bell in ring, maybe not. But overall persona, you know, if I'm listing my top heels, I mean, she'd be really high on that list. Okay. Personality wise, gimmick wise, super gimmick, super super gimmick for its time. Perfect heel to make a baby face get over. Yeah, I mean, super worker in the sense of knowing what to do and when, like to be really, really dominant, like and take most of the match, but know when to sell to get the person over. Awesome. Like, if you watch her matches, I mean, I don't know that anyone consistently got, you know, heat as a heel like her, not Piper, not anyone, you know, maybe Sheik. Sheik, not Iron Sheik.
Right. Yeah. The original Sheik.
Yeah.
Barry Windham in 97. I found him to be a really hard one because he peaked so high, but there was just a long time with him where it was just like, you know, it's kind of.
Yeah. Peak Barry Windham was one, you know, peak Barry Windham was probably top 25. But then after the peak, he's just a guy, you know. Yeah.
Like he fell real hard when he did fall.
Yeah, because of his knee issues and everything that he had, you know. That's really what it was the knee issues. But the Barry Windham from 83 to, I don't know, 90? Like there were points in time where, like, I thought he was the most talented American wrestler that there was, him or Savage. They were just so talented. Like the difference with him, like he was so much more talented than Ric Flair. Not that Ric Flair wasn't talented, he was, but Ric Flair had the drive and Barry Windham didn't have the drive. You know, like Ric Flair is a night after night, he always had to prove himself and things like that and would do these incredible matches. Barry Windham was, you know, just kind of like going through life and having fun and everything like that, but so talented. And when he was pushed, you know, like in a match with like a top guy, like a Ric Flair, you know, you could, some of Rick, I mean, I would say in the '80s, Ric Flair's best matches were Steamboat and Windham, you know, for sure. Steamboat and Windham. I think we haven't seen, you know, cause most of the best Steamboat, well, actually most of the best matches with both of them, we haven't seen, but, you know, the ones that we have, you know, I mean, like I said, I think pure talent wise, Barry Windham's probably, yeah, top, you know, I don't know if I lined everyone up, I'm not sure it would be top 25, but my gut says in that range, you know, at his peak. Yeah. He was awesome.
Do you think he'd still finish like top 50 for you, even with the downtime?
No, but see, that's how I don't know. I don't know. Probably no.
Okay.
He didn't, you know, so that's longevity thing.
How about a Daisuke Ikeda finished at 98?
I mean, like, again, like I could see like the style and everything, like he was really good at the style. He didn't feel to me like he was a superstar ever. He felt to me like he was a guy who, you know, was really, really good at what he did. So it'd be hard for me to, I mean, top 100, probably no. But, you know, I mean, biggest stars, no. But as far as like what he did for the environment he was in, yeah, he was really good. Really, really good.
Let's see. We got Mil Máscaras finished 194th. He popped up 50 spots.
Oh, man. I saw a lot of Mil Máscaras. So when I first saw him because of his, and this is more, well, no. I mean, like, his colorful costumes like got him over to kids. He also was a heavyweight flyer who flew more than most. I would not call him the best flyer of his era, but he was up there. Super, super charisma. Very difficult to have a good match with unless, you know, you understood how to work with him to make him look good. Like as a worker, probably not like that high. As a star, much higher than that. I guess is the best way to put it. You know, when he showed up doing the moves that he did in a lot of places, nobody had seen any of them. But once you started seeing a lot more of the Mexican wrestlers, you know, the only thing is he was big and muscular. Not big, but he was good size for that era and way more muscular than most of that era. And he had the agility. And he had all those unique moves. And he, you know, like you watch Mil Máscaras match and there's the certain spots and you just like love those spots, right? Like you have to see the thing where standing on his head and doing that head scissors thing and the flying cross chop, which is just a nothing move, but when he did it, it's just like, oh, we're getting to see Mil Máscaras. And like he had the aura of when you saw him that he was special. So in you know, so that was his strengths. But I mean, as far as like if he were to wrestle Terry Funk, would it be great? Yeah, of course. You know, like the greatest of the greatest wrestlers. They probably liked working with Mill for reasons of, you know, one, Mill would respect them and have the match. Number two, Mill was box office, which was the key. And they liked working with guys who were box office and super over as a babyface, you know, in the places that he went. So it was an easy, you know, it's easy to work a great match with him when you're at that level. But if you're a guy who's not at that level, he was very difficult to work with. So it's, you know, and again, I saw so much of him later in his career because he stayed around forever. But I mean, I would say like young and in his prime, because I did see that. I mean, I wouldn't have him top 100. But I mean, as far as like as a star, as a charismatic person, you know, pretty high, pretty high. Okay.
How about Carlos Colon?
You know, take him out of his environment, average wrestler at best. In his environment, you know, as the big superhero, he worked in that environment. It worked well. You know, did the bloodbath matches and everything like that. You know, built the territory. I mean, you can't say enough of him for being over where he was. You take him out of that element. You know, I saw him in San Antonio, nothing special. I remember when they built that whole first Meadowland show around him and Tully Blanchard, and people booed the match, you know, and did they booed him? It's not what they wanted. They wanted to see, you know, they want to see Flair and those guys. I mean, you know, like in Puerto Rico, yeah, outside of Puerto Rico, no.
Okay. I was a little surprised by this feller falling out of the top 100. He fell 79 spots from 45 to 124. Harley Race.
Oh, God. Harley Race was great live. He had, you know, he wrestled very slow. And normally I would think that was a disadvantage, but it was his style. It wasn't. I mean, he was really good, like a Valentine or somebody like that, where, you know, I think that he got over, I mean, he was a tough guy, but he got over that he was a tough guy, and he was technically really good. He took really big bumps, to get the baby face over and to kind of startle you and everything into thinking, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I mean, yeah. I mean, again, like I have seen better, like when I would see him live as world champion, I've seen some guys better, but he was right there with them. I think the thing was is that Ric Flair to me, more colorful, you know, I think, you know, quicker and all that. And, you know, and in some ways just so much more dramatic in the sense. So like as a world champion, I would put Ric Flair ahead of Harley Race, but man, Harley Race has to be top 100, you know, I mean, and probably much higher than that. I mean, he's another one, like, and again, like he could do the brawl, he could do the technical stuff. He had long, great, great, great longevity. He didn't have super color, but he got himself over. And the more you saw him, the more you respected him. I mean, like the Mushnick thing when he first came in to St. Louis, like he didn't get over super right away. And, you know, just because he didn't do anything super in that sense, like, I mean, you know, again, like pioneered the diving headbutt and things like that. But I just remember Mushnick going, like, the thing with him is we will get him over. And when we get him over, he's going to stay over for, you know, 10 years. And he did. You know, I mean, in time, he got bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, Harley's best drawing years were after his athletic prime, just because he kept coming to these places and coming to these places. And especially, like, I say this also, when he came, when I saw him in Florida, so this is like 74-ish, right after he was world champion, so 74, He was at that point, just because of like the diving headbutt and his ability to make the other guy look good, he was actually one of the best guys. I mean, he was one of the best guys in the world. He had great, great matches. I mean, a step above, you know, I mean, you know, right there with Briscoe. I mean, he really had great matches. So I would prime Harley Race. I mean, again, it's like compared to, I don't know, compared to some of the guys now, it's just a different world. But in his world, really, really good. Like really good.
Devil Dasami.
Awesome. You know, that first generation of women's wrestlers that were just freaking dynamic and everything, you know, and you know, she retired young and then came back and everything. But like, I remember like, there's a Devil Masami Bull Nakano match that was not in All Japan Women. When they were in rival promotions, oh my God, was that match great. And Devil Masami and Chigusa Nagayo had a very famous match. And that match was incredible, like match of the year. She was, she did power moves that none of the women could do, and easily. Like she was, I know people who thought that she was the best, you know, of that era. I mean, I thought Jaguar was the best of all the women of that era, but I know people who thought Masami was the best. You know, I mean, as far as just a worker and a wrestler and everything like that. Yeah.
Cool. Do you think she'd be top 100 contender?
Yeah, I think so. I'd have to lay it on. Yeah, I think so.
Sure. Black Terry.
I saw some Black Terry in the 70s in California. It was very good. It's hard. You know, I haven't watched a lot of that video that other people have of him. I mean, I've seen some, you know, it's hard. He was very good though. He was very good.
Top 100 level, do you think, or?
I don't know. I'd have to watch more of him to be really fair.
Okay.
I mean, off the top of my head, from what I've seen, I would say no. But, okay. But you know, I mean, again, I didn't see him. He didn't work in places that like I was watching the TV of. I mean, you know, like in the 90s and everything, you know, I watched a lot of AAA and he wasn't really around there. And I watched CMLL and he wasn't really around there. I mean, Japan, he wasn't around there. I didn't see him live on Lucha Libre shows here. I mean, as far as like in the 80s and stuff, or late 80s, 90s, right? I did 70s. Like, I mean, I remember in the 70s, I thought he was really talented, but not like, I guess like he didn't stand out to me like, say, Hamada, right? Hamada to me was like one of those guys where in that environment, it was like, okay, now this guy's really good.
Okay. So, Black Terry, maybe not 100. Hamada, do you think would be a top 100 guy?
Yeah, I think so. Because of the way he blended styles and everything. I guess because he's a Hall of Famer, I wouldn't say top 100 stars or anything, but I think underrated workers, like way, way, way underrated. Like his stuff in the 70s and 80s was great. And he was still great in his 50s. You know, he finally fell off, you know, into his 50s. But for an acrobatic high flyer in his 50s, man, he could go with those young guys. So yeah, I think Gran Hamada actually, I think he's one of the most underrated wrestlers that there's ever been. Yeah. I mean, he was super.
Who else would you put in that class of the all-time underrated guys?
You know, it depends. Bobby Eaton's one of people. Bobby Eaton was super, you know. I mean, Bell to Bell, Bobby Eaton was super. Jerry Estrada was great, great, great live wrestler. I guess in some ways now, you know, since I brought him up, Pat Patterson was a fantastic live wrestler. As far as like a live wrestler guy that with like a lot of little tricks and things, but he died very young, but like for his age in his 20s, I hate Gilbert. believe it or not. Like I wouldn't rate him in the top 100 of all time, but I think people have, I mean, I when I think about like having seen him live and everything, he was very entertaining and did, like with what he had, and, you know, I mean, you got to remember, like, he was very small for his era, as a heel and everything. He really was quite good.
One thing I noticed from the results this time around was that there was kind of a group of mid-carders that had previously done very well in the results and had all, they all fell 40 to 50 or so spots. Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, who you mentioned, of course,
Bobby Eaton, Bell to Bell, one of the best I've ever seen. I mean, one of the best. I mean, and I mean, he's one like for his era, like we used to always consider him like top 10, right? In his era every year. But Bobby Eaton, if he came along today, I mean, again, he'd probably need something, you know, like a manager, like in fact is what he had. But I think that if he came along today, because there's so much more of an emphasis on great matches, like him today, he would be viewed way higher, and he'd be booked. I mean, he'd be booked as a single superstar today, if he was like say an AEW, because people would just gravitate towards just how fantastic he was. Back then, it wasn't as important. You know, you need the big muscles and everything, or people didn't think you were really tough, and he was just like a guy who did, you know, good moves and sold great. But I mean, technically, I mean, he did everything, and everything looked good. And I mean, man, that, he was awesome. Arne Anderson was really good, of course. You know, I never considered him like the greatest, but he was a guy that when you went to a show, always really, really good. One of the best matches on the show, on shows with a lot of great people. Very consistent. His stuff looked good. Like never looked out of place. His moves looked very crisp. His selling was good. Technically, like for his era, he was excellent.
Do you think Eden and Anderson would both be top hundreds potentially?
I'd have to do a list. Eaton for sure. Anderson, maybe. I'd have to do a list. I mean, 100, that's a really elite level. I mean, people think, it's not that high. But I'm sure.
No, you wrote out real fast.
I mean, I am sure that if I wrote out all of the wrestlers that I've seen, you know, live and everything like that, I mean, I would think that, like, the guys in the 200s would still be pretty damn great. So top 100 for Arn, maybe. I don't know for sure. I'd have to lay it all out. But Bobby Eaton, absolutely. Like way, way, way high. I mean, maybe top 25, maybe even higher. I mean, Bobby Eaton's one of the best. I mean, as a bell-to-bell wrestler.
Dustin Rhodes also in that group fell 52 spots.
So here's the thing with Dustin Rhodes, okay? Dustin Rhodes is so freaking talented. But he had that long period where, you know, he had a lot of issues, you know, for years and years and years. You know, he got heavy. Like, there were periods where, like, it just wasn't good. When he was young, like for his age, 19, 20, 21, 22, for that age, like, way advanced. And I mean, it's a weird one because he was tall, you know, kind of like a Barry Windham and everything. But it was almost like for him, the Dusty Rhodes thing was a curse. You know, like, he's the son of Dusty Rhodes, but he doesn't have Dusty Rhodes' charisma because nobody had Dusty Rhodes' charisma. And then he went in the Goldust thing, which, you know, like, I mean, with the benefit of hindsight, I would say he did a great job with that gimmick, but it was not a gimmick that you were going to have great wrestling matches with very easily. I mean, I'm sure because he was such a good worker, he did have good matches with it, but it also was limiting. Even though he got main events, it was still limiting to me in the sense that you couldn't be considered one of the greatest with that gimmick. That gimmick was a holdback. And then afterwards, it was always like, kind of like, oh yeah, he used to be Goldust, the big star. So it's like, it was weird. Like, to me, like, it's funny. The two best Dustin Rhodes matches I ever saw was the match with Cody and the match with Kyle Fletcher, which was his last match. Like, those matches were incredible. And he was well into his 50s and he didn't worry, you know, and he evolved. Like, he wasn't one of those guys where, oh, they didn't do this move in the 70s. I'm not going to do it. I mean, he, like, you watch him with Kyle Fletcher and realize his age. Oh my God. You know, he was incredible in that match. And the Cody match was, you know, completely different because that's a pure emotion match. But my God, that's a masterpiece of a match. Yeah. So like Pete Dustin Rhodes, of course, but he had a lot of years where he wasn't, you know, where he was going through a lot of turmoil. And so, you know, like I think that the Dustin Rhodes of today, if he knew today the pitfalls of mistakes and started out in his 20s with the talent that he has, maybe ends up as an all-time great. I think I kind of think pretty close, you know, because he could have gone to Japan and if he had gone over and over and over again, you know, tall guy with great agility and great worker in time, you know, I think he could have gotten into that, you know, that role, the Terry Gordy thing, you know what I mean? That type of thing, maybe not quite, but close, like, you know, if he went over and over again and we'd be seeing like these great matches with those people. Cause he had that ability to do that.
Yeah. But I couldn't vote for him just because he lost so much time, like between his personal issues. And also just like after that, he just wasn't booked as a guy that mattered for a long time. Like he was
long
there.
Time.
But
yeah,
he was,
yeah.
And it's like almost what, 15 years or something where like he was just, you know, either not doing well or else like just not being used well. And it's really hard for me to square that with a top 100 guy.
Maybe 20 years.
Yeah.
Maybe 20. But I mean, it's he put it, you know, like he had the ability to be higher and he showed at all at various points of his career early on, a little in the middle, and at the very end that he was, but there was a lot of years there that were, you know, dark years. Yeah.
Another guy that that gets the love from a certain chunk of the voters for this kind of like mid-carder that is an all-timer role, William Regal.
He's a great wrestler. I mean, his stuff is good. His stuff is good. I think if you like that, the you know, I was a fan of that style. I really, really good. Really, really good. I wouldn't say necessarily you know, top 50 of all time. All time, that's pretty high level. But I think that there's a lot of his career. I don't think he got quite the breaks that he deserved, and then you also had the period in like his prime is the bodybuilder prime, and he didn't look like a bodybuilder. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
it kind of screwed him. Then he went to WWE where Vince just didn't get him, just didn't get it at all. So that screwed him too. You know, if you watch him in New Japan, man, he's pretty damn good. And some of the WCW stuff, like if you watch it, he's pretty damn good. I think that he's a guy who, you know, he had a great life in wrestling and everything like that. I think that if it was different and he was given a break, you know, and also a good showman too. That's the other thing with him is that he, you know, but you know, again, like in WCW, you know, in the late 90s, right? He's just kind of like a guy who's used to put people over, right? He wasn't a star or anything. WWE, like I said, Vince didn't get him, you know, Levesque got him, you know, and then as a coach, he's probably really, really great. You know, I mean, everything that I see, you know, he coached Danielson's fundamental. So much of that comes from him. But Danielson was a guy who came in the right era for Brian Danielson, and William Regal came. I think William Regal, probably British wrestling, came at the right time for him, maybe a few years too late, but in the United States, he probably came 15 years too early.
Yeah, that seems pretty fair. Let's see. I'm going to mention a few names as we wrap up here, just that more recent guys that did pretty well. And I'm curious to see how they do moving forward. Darby Allin finished 135th.
That's a tough one, but man, he's great. You know, I think he has better matches than Mick Foley, you know, although Mick Foley, you know, McFoley, you know, like, again, I wouldn't put McFoley as high as those people did. But at the same time, you know, McFoley was pretty great, too. But I think I've seen more great Darby Allin matches. Peak McFoley. You know, I mean, that's, I think, the reminder. Of course, McFoley's twice the size of Darby Allin. Obviously way, 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 way better promo, and made himself into a bigger star, than Darby, just because there's more eyes on the product and the ECW thing. And he was so unique. Darby's very unique too. But yeah, like, you know, I feel for Darby Allin though. It's just like, I mean, he's smaller, so I guess that helps as far as like being able to take the stuff, whereas Foley was so big doing that stuff. Maybe it wore his body out quicker. But I guess that's probably fair. You know, where he finished, I wouldn't necessarily say higher.
Yeah, 135th. I think that's pretty reasonable. Like flirting with top 100. Because he's been on TV for like 7 years now. So,
yeah.
And a featured guy too for that entire time.
Yeah. But very unique, you know, like, I mean, in the sense of, there's like he's someone that's going to be a lot more memorable than a lot of people. If you've watched him wrestle, just because it's like, oh yeah, Darby Allin, like you'll remember, you know, just this insane stuff that he did. And the funny part, I don't say he didn't need to do it because he probably did to get over, but, it's like, he's actually a way better wrestler than he gets credit for, in the sense of the actual wrestling. Like, I mean, I remember like seeing him live from the front row and everything, and the thing that I noticed is like, man, he's really good as a wrestler that you don't really notice on TV. I mean, he's completely insane what he does. I mean, and he's much better of a wrestler now. I mean, I remember when I saw him in PWG, and it was just like, he was nuts. I mean, maybe more nuts then than now, but you know now you see it more. But I mean, he did stuff like in front of like, you know, again, on those indie shows in front of like no people to get himself over. And it's crazy.
Hiroshima was an interesting one. I haven't spent much time watching him from DDT.
I probably haven't seen enough of him to completely be fair, but I have seen a decent amount of him. And he's very, very good. You know, like, where did he finish?
He finished like 195th, was it? Let me scroll back down. 197.
I think that's fair. I was going to say, like, I think maybe, I'd have to line everybody up. I wouldn't quibble with top 200 for him at all. He's very good. Yeah.
And just to give like an idea of what we're talking about, like here's the group from 201 to 205. Bam Bam Bigelow, Kyoko Inoue, Hiromu Takahashi, Masaki Mochizuki, and Ricochet. I mean, that's a hell of a group.
Ricochet, super talent, Bam Bam Bigelow. You know, I don't know that I have Bam Bam Bigelow that high, but not much lower. You said Taco or Kyoko Inoue?
Kyoko.
Yeah, Kyoko Inoue, I think, may be too low. A little too low. I saw her in some of the best matches that there were in that era. Ricochet, you know, kind of an amazing flyer, really. I mean, I would have Ricochet higher for sure. For sure.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about my, like, post-2010 knowledge. I feel like he's one of the three best in that period, you know, as far as high flying, to be clear.
Oh yeah, best high. There was a period where he was the best high flyer in the business. But the thing with him is like, he was such a legend on the indie scene for what he could do. You know, like, and there's guys now because he's older and there's younger guys and everything like that. I think Hiromu Takahashi. When I think about him, you know, with Dragon Lee and stuff, maybe that's too low also. But Ricochet's too low. Ricochet's too low.
My problem with Hiromu when it came to voting for him was that, like, I think I did end up voting for him in the second 47th. All right, that's about where I thought I'd have him.
That's fair.
Now, I'm going to repeat that I have like big holes in my knowledge, Joshi and like shoot style and stuff like that. I need to work on. But the problem I had with him about going higher is for the past, I don't know, post pandemic, I feel like. Like, he had good matches. Like, I'm not going to knock him, but, like, just very much kind of you know, on a cycle, you know, like there's this thing with juniors in the past 15 years with New Japan, where like you get to a certain level and then you're just like, they're like, okay, we got to stop using you as a featured guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the broken neck was really serious.
Yeah. It messed him up physically. Yeah, I mean, not like to the point where he couldn't work or anything, but it had an impact.
He came back and had great matches, but in the long run, it was going to, like with Austin, which is another reason for Austin, as far as like five, it's just like, you know, because of the injury, he didn't have the longevity.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing. I mean, like I said, as a big star. Yeah. But like his WCW stuff was very, very good. I think his WWE stuff, as far as like bringing the intensity and all that for a couple year period, is outstanding, but it's a couple year period.
I do think he was like maybe a little underrated as a worker, like late WWE/F, just because like once he kind of adjusted his style to really match what he could do physically, I think he was still excellent. Like, you know, as far as like a list of guys of like who made it feel real, like that was, I think his whole, how he carried himself in the ring really helped with that a lot personally.
Oh, as far as how he carried himself, his walk, things like that. One of the best I've ever seen as far as the conveying of the idea of, you know, this is a real fight, and a pretty damn good brawling. Yeah. He's just the breaking the glass and the walking and everything, like, and the walk to the ring and the face and everything. Super. In that regard, he's way, way up there. Yeah.
The highest finishing first time guy was Gunter, who finished at 61st.
It's hard. He's really great. I can't say, yeah, you know, I mean, again, because the thing with him is like, while like he did have some good stuff with Sheamus and obviously the Tyler Bate and Ilya Dragunov stuff in WWE is incredible. Some of the best matches WWE ever had. Like my favorite matches with him would be like Jordan Devlin and Will Ospreay and Ilya Dragunov in Europe. I just like the Will Ospreay and what's the guy, David Starr, like that stuff to me is like, that's super, super underrated stuff. Like if you watch that now, it's like, holy shit, you know? So yeah, I don't think that's too high at all. And maybe, you know, I think the problem now is that like, he's used so little, you know what I mean? Like he rarely wrestles on TV. And his pay-per-view matches, like they're good, but when was the last like Gunther pay-per-view match that was really like off the charts good? I don't feel like that he's ever on the main roster come close to the Dragunov and
Tyler. Oh, there was the Sheamus McIntyre triple threat.
The Sheamus McIntyre three-way was like, that's the one that I think of. And then some of the Sheamus matches, like they're great. But it's like, even like with Cody, right? You know, where, you know, the last one, I mean, granted, it's like I went in going like, man, this will be great, you know, cause, and it wasn't, you know, I mean, it was good. It was real good, but you know, and it wasn't their fault. I mean, they were, you know, the time didn't allow it. But there's, you know, that's the problem. You know, finish wasn't the best. It was, you know, an idea to bring back a return that I thought just fell flat to me.
Maybe SummerSlam 25 with Punk.
That was really good. Yeah, that was really good. But still, like, okay, but that didn't to me. There was some stuff actually. Like it came close, but I don't think it hit the level of the matches that I saw in Europe with him, or the match with. The WrestleMania match, you know, with it was three-way. Was it Mania?
Yeah, that was a couple of Manias ago, I think.
Right. So that three-way was like super. Yeah.
Let's see here. A couple more names for the road. Io Shirai finished 65th. Big jump from in the 300s. How do you think she's going to shake out long term?
She's. I mean. She's probably in the last year been the best wrestler in WWE, which may, you know, I mean, in some ways that's not I mean, it's a high compliment because compared to the people that she's with, but on a world stage, put it this way. If she went back to Japan and she did, so then you see her on that stage where it's kind of like you're not held back, if that's the right term. But basically, the stage where she knows she has to work harder, man, she was great. So, yeah, you know, I mean, I wouldn't argue that.
Let's do one more. Sa Ri finished 138th in her first time in the GWE.
Ooh, feels low. She's awfully good, you know.
Yeah.
She's awfully good. Technically fantastic. The big matches that I've seen of her, every time people like alert me to watch her, it's like it's always a great match. I think that's too low.
Cool. Well, great conversation about a bunch of guys, Dave. Really appreciate your time. Obviously everyone should know where to find you, f4wonline.com. Wrestling Observer newsletter just came out yesterday, just like pretty much every Friday. How are you feeling about the upcoming pay-per-views of both WWE and AEW? Finish with that.
I'm kind of looking forward to some of the stuff, some of the more unique matches, you know, like Kenny Omega, Zack Sabre, and, you know, what's Ricochet and Takeshita. That stuff like that, like it's kind of cool. It's not hitting me like the last show did, but we'll see. You know, I mean, I guess maybe the fact so many people are in that cage match. WWE Saudi, you know, it's hard because the last WWE show was just so mediocre, and NXT kind of interested in Lola Vice and Kendall Gray. Kind of think on that stage they might really hit it out of the park. TNA, it's hard to get excited about TNA right now. There's so much stuff, you know, around the world that's different level from them.
What do you think about the Dominion card for New Japan?
You know, it's tomorrow and actually late tonight, but I think it will be good, yet there's not one man and Yota Tsuji and Cal Newman, I think will be great, but there's not a match on that show. You know, that I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait. This is tonight. Even though I kind of think that the Yuto Ice and Oscar, almost every match that they have, I really end up getting super excited. I think that Yuto Ice is really cool. The Andrade match, like, probably going to be real good. I think Newman and Tsuji will probably be great. It's like, put it this way, I've been more excited about many Dominion shows compared to this, but I do think it will be really good. You know, there's a Fantastica Mania next week. Friday Arena Mexico is kind of like, that's old school childhood wrestling, but with modern moves, you know, in the sense of, you know, first match is what it is. The first match is never going to be the best match. Second match is what it is. The people, it's like the crowd is an interesting crowd. But once you get to the good matches, that crowd is great. You know, seeing all those people in that building is great. And, Mystico in that element, you know, I'm almost every Friday, you know, those main events, man, they're like fantastic. I have no idea what they're doing for anniversary. They haven't really tipped their hand and it's not that far away. Not this coming Friday is actually a real big one, you know, with, just because it's Fantastica Mania and all that. So, so that's kind of looking forward to that, I guess.
Cool. Oh, thanks for joining us, Dave. Had a lot of fun.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah.
Oh, everyone, thank you for listening. Dave, thanks again for your time and everyone take care.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.